You've now entered the House of Mystery on KYAH. Utah's Talk Authority with your hosts, Al Warren and Kev Thompson. Also, Julie Saville with the Paranormal Report. The True Crime Commentary by Stephen David Lampley. And Dr. Joseph Usensky's Conspiracy Countdown.
Welcome back to the House of Mystery on KKNW 1150 AM Seattle. I'm Al Warren, and today joining me is Stephen Lampley. Thanks for being here, Steve.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, you're the new team member. Let's get you broke in hard.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, yeah, it's good to have you. So now joining us, of course, we've got a veteran, a pro. Everybody should be watching or listening to the Opperman Report. So joining us now, sitting in, is Ed Opperman, president of the Opperman Investigations Incorporated. And, of course, he's the Opperman Report. Thanks for being here, Ed.
Hey, thank you so much, Alan. It's good to meet you this evening.
Well, so...
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, so Ed... How did you get into this private investigation thing? Where did it start for you?
I'm glad you asked that, Alan. No, I grew up in New York, and I grew up on the East Coast in the Bronx. And I used to hang out in Manhattan with the hippies in the Washington Square Park and stuff like that. And they were up to all kinds of stuff. And what happened was I met a guy that worked at the phone company. And this is like, I'm talking 1976, 1977. This is a long, long time ago. I'm an old man. I met this guy who worked at the phone company, and he said to me, if you give me an unlisted phone number, I can go look it up. So to find out the guy's name and where he lives and stuff. So he comes back to me with this printout from the phone company, and it has the guy's name, it has his social security number, it has his work phone number, it has his bank account number, and it has a list, his address, of course, and a list of all the phone calls made from the guy's phone.
Wow.
So I took a look. Yeah, I know. And this is way back. This is way back from identity theft. So we had no idea, what you could do that with it. But I talked to some friends of mine that were, characters. And they says, Ed, you know who want to buy this is bail bondsmen and private investigators and collection. They'll want to buy this from you if you can get this all the time. So that I went around. I started meeting private investigators and knocking on doors. And showing them what I could get, and I became an information broker.
Oh, that's before the internet.
Way before. Before fax machines, it was way before.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, 77, that was last century, so.
Yeah.
So you just made it into a career. I mean, that's just, wow. How did you
What happened was, okay, this was like gold back in those days to have this kind, and you could sell this for a lot of money too. So I got to meet a lot of private investigators, and I became a reliable source for this kind of information. And I made it a point to develop other sources, like at the DMV, or at the bank, who could look up things for me, and because I knew I could buy and sell this information. And I began working out of an office in Brooklyn, Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. The guy was a forensic investigator. He was a handwriting expert. Forensic documents examiner, they called it. And he was a ballistics guy. He was a gunsmith. And I remember going in there, and he had all these little certificates and diplomas all over his wall. He had guns. He's wearing a shoulder holster and stuff like that. And I said, this is what I want to do, And I hooked up with him. He gave me a little space in his office. And it turned out he was working on all these big organized crime cases. We worked on the Carmine Persico case and the Pizza Commission case. And the pizza, what was it called? The Pizza Connection. The Pizza Connection. And the other one was the commission, the Mafia Commission trial. He was working on all these big organized crime cases, so I got a piece of that. You know who was prosecuting that case? Rudy Giuliani and Michael Chertoff.
Wow.
And I was a 19-year-old kid at the other end of the table.
Wow.
How do you like that?
Yeah. That's pretty cool, actually. Wow. So... You did that. How did you start doing radio?
Well, you know, the radio, well, what happened was, okay, I did a little bit of radio when I was a kid in New York City, WBAI, because I was a funny kid. And I don't know if you remember radio back in those days, guys like Frank from Queens.
Yeah.
You heard of him? He used to call the Barry Farber show and Bob Grant.
Yeah.
So I used to start calling in. I used to call into WBAI, especially on Friday nights. They had a lineup of shows, Citizen Kafka, Lynn Samuels, and Kathy O'Connell. And I would call in with different characters. And I was the first guy to call in and do an imitation of Frank from Queens, okay? And I started imitating it, and other people picked it up and started doing it all over. So they had me – I was a regular caller. They had me – you know, we staged bits where I would call in advance. We would know what I was going to do. And then they started having me come down to the station. I was 18, 19 years old. And I would go down to the station, and I would sit in the other room and pretend I was a caller and work from in there. We'd work on little bits together and stuff like that. So that's my first touch at radio back then. But I didn't get back into radio until 4 years ago. And I got involved in all the – I sent you some paperwork, all that stuff. I got involved with the Tiger Woods case and the – who was that guy? Ashton Kutcher and all that kind of stuff. That I was getting hit from the media, was contacting me for interviews and stuff. And I started doing a lot of interviews. And then I realized, well, if I write a book, you know, I can just sit home and do interviews and make jokes on the radio and be entertaining. And wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be a great way to make a living? Yeah. The biggest thing ever made, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy business. So I noticed, now you do a lot of investigations now and present them on your show.
Yeah.
What draws you to a case? Like, what makes you focus on something and put it out?
That's a good question. A lot of times you just fall into it. I'd like if it's something interesting for the radio, if it's an interesting topic, you know, or maybe I have a background into it. Like right now, okay, I'll tell you. There's something going on with Corey Feldman and Corey Haim.
Right.
You know, they contacted me, you know. Corey Feldman's mother contacted me. And I'm helping, you know, helping to get a lawyer and helping to put a case together and stuff like that, you know, and protect her interests in the case. So then you start meeting people and you're talking to them. I just interviewed this other kid today. Not he's not a kid anymore. But you know who it is? You know who Scott Schwartz is? He's the kid, yeah. A Christmas Story that was licking the pole in A Christmas Story. He was that little kid. who's stepped in a frozen pole. He's an adult now. And he was friends with him and Corey Feldman. And he just came out with his side of the whole, what is the theory of that whole situation is.
Yeah, but how do you feel about – you see, the problem nowadays is so many people are judging things on feelings, not so much fact. So really, how do you draw the line? Like, I'm sorry, but just when you bring up the Corey's, when I look at him talking on different shows now, mainly he's been on Dr. Oz, I guess, but and he's talking about the whole molesting sort of thing. I just don't believe him. And that's a terrible thing to say because I get this real, I don't know, desperate feeling out of him.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what Scott Schwartz just spent 90 minutes telling me, the same exact thing. And he knows Corey Feldman his whole life. And that's what Corey Haim's mother, Judy Haim, is telling me as well. And I'm going to have her on the show like next week. They have the same exact opinion of you that you're having of Corey Feldman.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you too, you know, because they're making these allegations against, well, anyway, many people are making these allegations against Charlie Sheen in that case. I had a case too where Charlie Sheen attacked my client, that girl, Capri Anderson in the hotel there in New York. So I've been on that end of it too. So, you know, yeah.
I believe it with Charlie Sheen and a woman, but not a man.
Well, no, but that was Charlie Sheen beating up a woman, very small woman. And by the way, too, what you don't hear about in the press with that story, too, is when the police showed up at that hotel room door, Charlie Sheen was naked and covered in his own blood because he had broken all this glass in the room. And you never hear about that. But since then, it has come out that Charlie Sheen's been with men. And there was a lawsuit, too, where they had a video of when he knew he had AIDS and he was having unprotected sex with a man.
Oh,
yeah, that's out there. That's out there now in the public.
Oh, see, that's really surprising to me. I just thought he was a dog. You know what I mean? He loved a lot of girls. But like yeah, you don't know. So now what do you do with a case like that, like the Corey's, if someone approaches you that you don't believe?
Yeah, okay, that's a tough one, you know, because that does happen. And it, depending on what the circumstances are, like if they're a defendant in a criminal case, I still have to protect their interests. You know, it's my duty to do that. But if they're trying to advance some kind of a money-making scheme, you know, and they want me to help them do that, I'll definitely turn that down, you know. That's not something I want to get involved in, especially to stay on 55 years old. You know, I won't get involved in a stage of my life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think about all these sexual things?
As far as what? Oh, with the, what's his name?
It's endless. Every day, I don't know what I hear more about. Every day I wake up and someone's fired or accused of having sex with someone, and Trump does something. So it's just kind of back and forth.
Okay, yeah. All right, listen. Soon as Harvey Weinstein came out, everyone's known these stories about Harvey Weinstein, okay, for years and years and years. And I just interviewed a guy, Charles Upham, who's a Native American guy. And his daughter worked for Weinstein Corporation. And his daughter was raped at the Golden Globes by someone, a Weinstein executive is all he knows. He doesn't know exactly who it was, but it could be Harvey Weinstein. She was raped right there in the ladies' room, no, in the men's room. She was online for the ladies' room. She got pulled into the men's room, raped in front of a bunch of guys. And they were all, whoever the guy who raped her was, they were all giving him high fives and cheering him on. So he was someone who was well-known and had respect in the industry. But the thing is, when these allegations first came out about Harvey Weinstein, you can go back in my archives and look at it. I was saying all along, there's a lot more things to be worried about Harvey Weinstein than him coming out of a room with a towel around him. Okay, and because this guy, you know, and it came out that he's hiring these Mossad agents. Everybody knew about that stuff. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on. You know? Yeah, and I'm glad that part came out, because this guy was, and there's even a movie, too, called Overnight, by this guy, Sean Duffy, who was a musician who made a deal with Weinstein, and he talks about it in this movie. This is like a 10-year-old movie. It's a documentary. He talks about his life being threatened and an attempt made on his life. So there's a lot more to that whole thing that is coming out.
I'm just surprised. I'm surprised at a lot of the reactions, because to me, I think this is going on in all parts of society. It's not just Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. You get these sexual harassment cases all the time and stuff. But the thing about Hollywood is I think it gets more publicity, and it's covered up more, too, because these stars, they're willing to make the payoff. They're willing to pay to make it go away. You know, because they don't want it to get out in the public. So that's maybe why I see a lot more of those cases than I do in non-celebrity situations. But you hear about those payoffs, too, like, you know, all over the place.
Yeah. Oh, and today, Matt Lauer, so...
Right.
I mean, that came out of nowhere, it seemed like, to me. I was surprised.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about him, but, you know, it is kind of interesting how... Well, you see all this stuff, especially on Matt Lauer's Katie Couric, right? Katie Couric and George Stephanopoulos, is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, both of them were attended a party with Woody Allen and the convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. After Epstein was convicted of raping little girls, there was a party held, a very public party, in support of him. And Katie Couric was there and George Stephanopoulos was there. And you take this back, and you don't hear any mention of that in the press. How come? And you take that same situation back, the Epstein case. You had, what's his name, Kevin Spacey, right?
Right.
Kevin Spacey showed up on the flight logs flying with Jeffrey Epstein on his plane. He was on a flight there with Bill Clinton and Chris Tucker. Now, how come nobody mentions Kevin Spacey's connection to Epstein? How come nobody mentions Couric and Stephanopoulos' connection to Epstein? Nobody mentions Trump's connections to Epstein, and they were co-defendants in a lawsuit, a civil lawsuit, alleging that they raped a 13-year-old girl. So as much as this stuff is coming out in the public, there's a line drawn. They seem to have no problem talking about adult women getting abused, which of course is wrong, or adult women being in a room where a guy's taking his towel off. But what? How come the line is drawn when it comes to these people raping little kids, and they don't talk about that?
Yeah, that is surprising. You know, it seems like all the child cases seem to get, I don't know, brushed away really quickly.
Or treated like a joke, like in this case with this Roy Moore character. Yeah. Why is it treated like a joke that this guy, just think, that this guy's a prosecuting attorney, and he's in a courtroom, and he sees a little girl on a bench at a custody hearing, and that's who he picks to prey on? That's who he targets? You know.
Why do you think that is? But I mean, not that why he targeted a little kid. Obviously, that's an issue. But why do you think he's still in the race, and why do you think he's still got so much support?
I don't know. Well, the support thing, you know, like everyone's talking about this tribalism now. Like you saw this thing just came out yesterday with this guy from Veritas, this guy O'Keefe, you know, who was trying to set up a stage, a victim to disgrace the Washington Post and to kind of discredit them. Like this is a and that company was Veritas was getting money from Trump. They got $10,000 from Trump during the campaign. So you know, why is it being covered up? I think a lot of, especially when you get to child molestation, a lot of it gets covered up because a lot of people are involved. You know, and they got blackmail dirt over them, and so everybody has to keep their mouth shut. Clinton had connections to Epstein. Trump had connections to Epstein. That's why it never came up in the campaign. You know, I have a 24-page document. It's on my website, OpperantReport.com, that has the 24-page letter from Epstein's attorneys to the prosecuting attorneys, where he talks about how he was instrumental in creating the Clinton Foundation. Okay, so you know, when you're up at that level, and you got both of these sides in your pocket, Trump's in your pocket and you got Clinton in your pocket, you can pretty much get away with anything. And you got blackmail dirt on everybody.
Wow. So that's sort of, but what's confusing to me is why in the general public, why it's become acceptable to let that behavior go on and you still let them do their job.
Yeah, I know. That's maybe we're being desensitized to it. I'm a little disturbed about that too, because it seems like more and more people know about it, but people should be outraged. And if you go back even to Michael Jackson, like, you know, we're talking about, everyone knew Michael Jackson was diddling little boys, but why did it become a joke on the Johnny Carson show? You know what I mean? How did that become a joke? You know, something to laugh about, make little jokes about, always chasing him on his roller skates. You know, maybe for a long time we're being desensitized to all this for whatever purposes. I don't know. But whatever it is, I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just really confusing to me. I see a lot of the attacks online and people fighting online, like on Facebook and all that stuff, about these sort of subjects. And I just don't get it. Especially the Roy Moore one's kind of the big one in politics now.
Yeah, like where do you draw the line? And I got to say, the other one too. Who's that guy? Al Franken? I think he should resign too, you know, just because he's a Democrat. I'm way to the left of the Democrats. But I think he should resign too. What is this? You know what I mean? These are people we're supposed to be, have some kind of respect for. And I don't know about you, Alan and Steve. Well, you know, what people I hang around with don't talk to me about these kind of things. People who I'm friends with and socialize with aren't out there telling me, oh, yeah, I was just in a hotel room and took my robe off for my intern or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where is this going on?
I guess we have the wrong crowd we're hanging out
with. Yeah, right?
I don't know.
I owned a nightclub in Manhattan, man. We didn't do it then. I've been out there.
You know. Yeah. And I spent, as a police officer, the last 2 years, I worked undercover. I was a 14-year-old girl. I know you can't tell by my picture, but this is a lot. People have no clue. This is a lot more rampant than people even can imagine. There's so much of it going on.
Yeah, that's what I said. It seems to be in general society. Maybe that's why there's people that take sides. Maybe it's because it's something they would do.
Yeah, I, who knows with that, you know? It does seem to be, too, that, you know, because we were joking about Pizzagate, you know?
Yeah.
I know. You know, but and you hear these like there's that article came out about the myth that when Trump came into office, he made 1,400 pedophile arrests. He's rounding up all the pedophiles. It seems to be that this that there's a fascination with this topic right now. Everyone knows what's going on. Okay, Jimmy Savile, you know, and this kind of activity going on in high places for blackmail purposes and stuff. It's gone on since the Franklin cover up, right? But it seems like now, and anybody who has like a hope or a dream in their mind that Trump is going to somehow round up all the criminals and the pedophiles, and you know, and all that has been debunked. But it just seems to be now, it's just another piece of ammunition in the left and the right, the Democrats and the Republicans fighting back and forth with each other. Well, you got more pedophiles than we do. Clinton's a bigger, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? How low have we sunk?
Yeah. That's what surprised me, because I don't know where is it leading to. Like, what is the outcome of this? Because it's almost to the point where you can do anything.
Yeah.
And your tribe stands behind you, and the other one attacks you, and it's just back and forth like this. And it's what happened to the days of integrity? Or maybe there never was. Maybe we just thought there was.
No, just think back just a year and a half ago, before that Trump's announcement and the escalator where he comes down and he starts calling Mexicans rapists and just stuff that was just so wildly over the top. You know, a month before would have been considered, you know, just think if back in just 2 years ago, these kind of things grab them by the, you know, crotch and all this kind of, all this kind of stuff would have been so unacceptable just a couple of years ago. Yeah, you know, you guys are my age. Just think when we were growing up and like William F. Buckley, you're watching William F. Buckley on TV and Dick Cavett. So imagine these kind of topics coming up, you know, it would be the hugest scandal in the world.
Yeah.
So it was, I guess so. We've lost our standards and our decency in so many different ways, and our self-respect.
That was sort of my problem with Trump, and you know I stay out of politics as much as I can online, but I sort of don't really get how he can do so many things or say so many things, and just get away with it.
Yeah, I guess because the entertainment factor, you know, because I have to admit, before he was elected, I would tell my kid, I said, well, it'll be so much fun. We'll just see one crazy thing after another and just watch the whole system crash, you know, and it seems to be what's happening. You know, it may not be so funny when North Korea is dropping a bomb on our head, but until then.
Well, that's sort of my thought. You know, it's not, you know, it would be fun if it wasn't so serious.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Like if it was, you know, things were good in the world right now and everything was pretty calm, it would be kind of funny. It would be a hilarious sort of thing. Sure. Something like you'd see in a skit. And I'm not as relaxed as I'd like to be.
Yeah, even this whole Russia thing, you know, is all unprecedented. Although, you know what, I can't say that, because we've had that kind of corruption with the Clintons, you know, making deals with other countries and side deals with the Clinton Foundation. But it just seems like this is such amateur hour, yeah. The way it's being done. And it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're going to...
Yeah, and whenever you ever get into the dark net or you get onto the Onion, right, and you start going through the Tor, you see how much... America is really under attack online, and it's almost all Russian, but it's almost like we don't even know what's going on, you know? I don't know. It's just sort of bizarre that all of this stuff is happening.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've been doing some shows about that. I don't know, if you listen to this whole thing about Rosneft, the Rosneft oil privatization deal, because if you look into that, especially with this guy Grant Stern, has been doing a lot of great work on it. If you look into that, Grant, if you just Google Rosneft, Trump comes up automatically right after it, and it really and it was this privatization of this oil deal in Russia, and it pretty much, when you look into this, it pretty much makes everything make sense, because all the people involved, Sessions, And the Russian foreign diplomat and the Mayflower Hotel, that meeting there, and how the Filipinos were there, and Qatar was there. All these characters, it all makes sense that this is all pretty much, it was a money deal from the start, this whole Trump-Russia connection involving right as the Rosneft deal.
Yeah. Well, I think some things are pretty obvious in the sense that you look at something like Trump and with Russia and stuff. For me, of course, it's all about money.
Yeah.
That's who Trump is. Look at him. That is who he is. I don't think of him as a really wise character and planning all these things to pull out Hillary and win the election, all this stuff. I think he's all about the money.
Oh yeah, and if you look right now, you know who's was involved in that Rosneft deal too was Giuliani, you know, who was joined at Trump's hand through all that time.
Yeah.
But how much better are the Clintons? They're worse, you know. Did you support Clinton?
No. Well, I'll tell you what. For me, I don't support Clinton. But the reason I vote for Clinton is because I look at the two people and I think of them both the same. I think of them both as criminals in this way, and both having a lot of money and taking it off the backs of working people. And I don't support either one in their ideology. But the thing is, for me, the vote has to go to a Democrat in the case of where Trump or you know, whoever it is, because of that. Because I can only go far when you accept rights on humans, and Trump is just not acceptable. I don't know if that makes sense. He's just not acceptable in human rights.
That's all race factor with Trump. You know, the guy's a blatant racist.
And that's kind of the problem. Same as Roy Moore. When you bring him up, first of all, he's the guy that says, gay people should be arrested. It should be illegal to be homosexual. You should round them all up and they should be taken out. Why would I vote for that man?
Yeah.
I just, like, hello. So people like that give you no choice when you... Or especially if you're the ones who they're talking about. It's just to the point where, okay, great. So I don't care if he's, not that I don't care, but it doesn't matter if he's guilty or not of molesting kids. He wants to round up a group of people and basically they should be killed or be arrested.
Yeah, and just think, you know, just a few years ago, that kind of conversation, we wouldn't be having this kind of conversation about rounding up Muslims or rounding up homosexuals or rounding up anybody, really, you know, and this kind of thing. And I, with the first speech I saw from Trump, I said to my daughter, I said, that's fascism. Now, that's what you're watching there is a fascist strongman, you know, and things don't. And look at, we got a White House now, half of them in there are generals, you know, and half the White House being run by the military. You know, we're in scary times, man. We are really at a bad time in this country.
So that is why I'm voting for a Democrat at that time. That's why I'd have to support Clinton, because at that particular election, I don't accept the views of what the Republicans are putting forward in for the White House. Trump doesn't represent what I feel.
I never support the Clintons after what they did to Bernie, man, especially here in Nevada.
Exactly, I agree totally. But I think our hands are tied. You've got a choice to vote one or the other. What do you do?
Well, yeah, but if she stole it, you know what I mean, then she doesn't deserve it, and she deserves to lose. You know, and Trump, like I said, watch the whole thing crash and burn. Hopefully, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's hard to say where it's going to go. But and how many supporters do you lose over talking bad about Trump?
Oh, forget it. I lost a ton, especially the financial supporters or the member section. And I would come on here and I'd say, hey, listen, man, you know, you want me to lie to you? You want to come on here and lie to you? And someone would say, yeah, let's lie.
Yeah. No, and it's hard. It's hard. I've had the same thing to deal with. I haven't been as vocal as you.
Yeah, I know. I lost a lot of people because a lot of the stuff I work on, these topics, the conspiracy topics, which is pretty much the same stuff as you. A lot of them are right-winger types. And I think they mean well following Trump. A lot of them are just gullible. But also, too, I think there's a racist faction to that, too, that they just follow Trump because they're just racist.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. What am I going to do? Listen, I'm going to tell the truth. I'm not going to fudge. I'm not going to hold back.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's almost to the point where I don't know that I mean, the hardcore Trump supporters, the 30% or whatever it is, they're not really listening to anything.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Right? I mean, he's the one, and that's it. And there's, it's really kind of sad. He could actually shoot someone on Fifth Avenue, and they would still support him.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of it, too, is just to piss off the liberals. You know, they just... We've been dumbed down. We've been dumbed down in this country. You know, if you look back over our lifetime, you know, from where we were back in the 80s and the 70s to where we are today, it's the debate has been dumbed down. People, Kennedy and this stuff, you listen to it, it's just a pathetic discussion. So.
Yeah, and you know, we do a lot of stuff from the 60s and 70s, but one thing that was different was the liberal groups back then, like Black Panthers and all these other, so much of the counterculture was against government and about peace and love and all that Woodstock and all this stuff. But right now, it seems to be the conservatives that are against government.
Right. I know what you're saying. Right. There is a serious left out there still. You just don't see it on TV anymore. You don't hear about it. There's, you know, Antifa's out there. Yeah, there is the anarchist movements out there. There is, and Black Lives Matter. You know, there is a real left street movement out there. I'm involved in it.
Yeah.
But it's still out there. But it's just been so infiltrated, man. It's been so infiltrated. It's just unbelievable. We had a little march here on the Las Vegas Strip in support of Tashi Farmer. Who was this black guy who got killed in one of the casinos? He was choked out by the cops, you know. And there was a guy who attacked our people with a knife. Okay, he was wearing a Trump hat, by the way, too. And our people got arrested. We got 10 videotapes. Our people got arrested. Cops didn't arrest him. They used him as a complainant in the tape. Then the Sheldon Adelson in his, because this happened at the Adelson Casino. Sheldon Adelson's private security was involved in questioning the protesters. You know, the infiltration is just so, it's just all over the place.
The problem with the serious left now
is that
nobody's scared of them. Nobody cares. Like people were, and I mean that in the sense of, you know, Black Lives Matter, I mean, might have a serious thought, but people aren't, there's no fear of that. Like, and I mean that. You look at the Black Panthers, people were actually worried about.
I hear you. And Black Lives Matter was a real organic group when it was coming up, but then it was discredited by saying, well, Soros is running. But some of their tactics, though, like shutting down highways and stuff like that, I thought was a good progressive tactic coming up. But again, it's just gets so marginalized and discredited. We're now that just people can say, well, it's a terrorist group. Black Lives Matter is a terrorist group. For what reason? I can't understand. But it's still, it's just.
Well, it's easier to label them something negative like that, even though they haven't really, you know, they haven't been out. You know, I don't know. But I think we need some of the Patty Hearst in the left now. We need something like that where they actually are doing something and people stop and take notice because the other side has their KKK and it has their, you know, Nazi groups out there and doing things, killing people.
But if you ever notice, you know, when the Nazi right does come out and they have their street actions, they lose every time, you know, and when the left was protesting in the street against the Trump rallies. You know, we won every time. You know, we won every street fight. And they even had the cops on their side shooting tear gas at us. So we've always won. It's just in the press, they don't portray it that way. And they portray us as snowflakes. you know, which is the furthest thing from the truth. It's just the it's, but they get away with it because they control the media. And you know how the right wing controls radio, talk radio, forget it. Forget it, man.
That's why when we were talking, when you said that earlier, I think you thought I interviewed you on KFNX.
Yeah.
That is the worst station I have ever worked for. And I to talk about terrible people, and I hope they hear this.
But it's right in your face. You try to deal with some of these station owners or these station managers, it's right in your face, man. They want, and some of these sponsors, too, they'll tell you, oh, you got to talk about the coming global collapse. The monetary system is going to collapse. You got to talk about that kind of stuff and to buy our gold and silver and our horrible food. You know?
Yeah. Oh, you know. You see, that just kind of, I roll my eyes. And when I was in the middle of that station and you'd go in and they have, even when they're up to the thing when Trump started running, I was still there and they have posters of him up in the station. I just couldn't take that group anymore, you know.
And we're up against it because they own the stations. And the sponsors are right-wing for the most part. And then they cultivate the listeners, you know. And it's like a funnel, you know, bringing the suckers to buy the store food.
Well, and I worked with Laura Ingraham.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, oh, what a hag. You know, yeah, she wouldn't touch anything that I had touched.
Really?
That was the most, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, she kind of thought I was dirty, you know. So, you know, the things you did, you know, that's what, you know, I don't dislike a conservative. I don't have any hate for anybody, but sometimes people don't realize what happens to someone in real day-to-day life, you know. And so you hear stuff and you see discriminatory things and people roll their eyes like, oh, that doesn't really happen. I don't know.
Yeah, I interview right-wing people on my show, and I try and be – I'm accepting – I accept everybody's opinions. I don't get into big arguments and stuff like that. And you take people as they come, you know, and you do the best you can.
Well, the full-time host that I work with, Kevin Thompson, he is serious Tea Party right-wing Trump supporter.
Well, Tea Party started out of, what's his name, Ron Paul. You know, I liked Ron Paul when he was running. I knew he didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
But,
you know, and I, you know, so I can get along. We're really close friends. But,
oh, yeah.
But there's... there are differences. We do have different opinions, but I think a lot of things surprise him that people do from the right. But, you know, what can you do?
Right? Yeah, it's not like, you know, because both parties now are just so controlled by the corporations and the Goldman Sachs, you know, funding both parties and stuff. You know, and what I found out, too, here locally when during the caucus and stuff, is that in the Democratic Party, even the volunteers, the lobbyists insert the volunteers into these organizations. They pay people to go down there and volunteer, and they control everything from start to finish. And even when we had the debate here in town, it was at the Trump Hotel. Trump was staying at the Trump Hotel. But the local politics, the local government allowed these taco trucks to surround the building, you know, and... Yeah, and here we were. We were the real protesters. We couldn't even get a stage or a microphone or bring a bottle of water to our area. But these unions and Democratic Party, really, that was protesting against Trump, were allowed tents and sound systems and stages and taco trucks that the Trump couldn't get in and out of the building. Because I interviewed Liddy Denier, who was the girlfriend of Ambassador Stevens. You know, she was there. And Trump's, Obama's brother from Kenya, he was there. And the mother from the guy who got killed in Benghazi, who spoke at the convention, she was there. These were all Trump's guests staying at the Trump Hotel. They were going to be there at the debate. But what happened was the cops, the LAV, the Las Vegas Metro Police Department, stopped their caravan of black SUVs that said Trump Pence on the side and stopped them and prevented them from getting to the event in time to be there to support Trump. So the local cops and the local government were on Hillary's side.
Yeah.
Openly.
Yeah. Oh, and that brings me, when you say talk about protesters and stuff, what do you, what's your thought on George Soros?
You know what? I've tried to find something, the real dirt on him, you know, some real evil about him, you know, that I could. And I really can't find what the big complaint about Soros is. I'm sure he's involved in the stock manipulation and money manipulation and stuff like that. I'm sure he is, just like every other of these oligarchs. He's not no friend of mine, I'm sure of that. And he's just as evil as the rest of these rich folks. But as far as being some kind of James Bond type villain, you know, supporting the left, I don't see where that comes. I know all the people I know in Black Lives Matter. No one gets a dime from Soros. I can tell you that for a fact. Oh, but I tell you what, we did have an event here. Oh, wait a second. We did have an event here that was hijacked by MoveOn.org right at the beginning when Trump was first elected, and they were having that "Not My President" thing. Because I know all the local activists here. We all know each other. We go to each other's houses. You know, we're very friendly. And no, really, because it's all pretty. They're naive, you know. But they're a naive bunch, man. Yeah. But we get along good. The different groups. Not like back in New York, where we're all fighting with each other. But we suddenly, some out of nowhere people form this group on Facebook saying we're going to have a protest against Trump, and like 10,000 people sign up overnight. And we're all like, what the hell is going on here? And they're not letting us get involved, and they don't want to talk to us, you know? And then there was a whole thing with stage, too, where the protesters ran, and they knocked down a fence, and they had a sit-in in the middle of the street, and it was the cops blocked off the exit to the parking lot so that they could have this sit-in in the middle of the street. Normally, we could never do that. So that was a MoveOn.org. They had water. They had water bottles provided for them, and they had parking spaces provided for them at one of the casinos. So it was a totally orchestrated protest. That's the only one I've seen.
Well, yeah. Who orchestrates these then? I mean, I hear George Soros all the time. That's why I brought it up.
Well, the Soros funds MoveOn.org, that's for sure. So that was a Soros. Yeah. And what they did was, too, is because I was there that night and I was reporting on it, there was a whole other side thing, too, where some right-wing guys showed up with guns that might have been a staged event, too. Everyone was there, you know, and people were talking they were bussed in from California. People were saying they came from California. But we didn't see anybody there that night with Hillary t-shirts saying, "I am with her." But the next day on Facebook, they had all these pictures of people that they inserted into it and made it look like everyone there was Hillary supporters, when none of the local left here is Hillary supporters. We were totally burning this town.
Yeah. Wow. It's just crazy. I wanted to ask you about Anthony Weiner.
Okay.
So what's the story behind him? Like, why did he keep on doing this sort of thing? Do you know? Do you have any insight on him?
You know, I did the first phone in the Wienergate case, the very first one, the woman who lived here in Las Vegas. Okay, so I was there at the beginning of Wienergate. And there were allegations way back then that he was communicating with kids. Okay, and all that was forwarded to the cops. Then when the letter came out, the Sydney Leathers came out, and that whole thing, I wasn't involved, but I knew all the people who were packaging that and doing all that. My former agent was running that whole show. What drives Weiner to keep doing this, and he has to be some kind of a perverted sex addict to continue this after having all that exposure and then losing the race and losing your Senate seat and all that stuff like that. But I'll tell you this, you know, because I do a lot of computer forensics and cell phone forensics. I see people's deep, dark secrets in their computers and stuff. And I'll tell you this, man, he had just married that Uma Abedin. They had just gotten married. And so when he was courting her, these are the things that were on his mind. This isn't an aberration that came out of some different left field. So this is what he was into when he was dating her. And I don't believe for one second this was a deep, dark secret in his head that she wasn't aware of. Okay, I think that this is something that they both enjoy together. I also have my suspicions, too, about what went on there when the police had his laptop, and Hillary's emails are showing up on his laptop, and Eric Prince from Blackwater is running around telling people that he has sources at NYPD that says that there's all this dirt on this laptop. I've talked to other people, And I think if there was dirt on that laptop, I think the dirt on that laptop wasn't used to prosecute him. I think it was handed off to someone who used that dirt on him for blackmail purposes and possibly to blackmail the Clintons. I also think, too, what was I going to say with that? I might have lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, right. Oh, yeah. He has charges hanging over his head. You know, he pled guilty, but there's other charges that they could still prosecute him, indict him on. Okay? Yeah. Well, and I've never seen a plea deal like that before. Well, I guess I can't say never. But there's a very unusual type of plea deal where he's pleading. Now he's going into prison, but there's still charges hanging over his head. You know? So it's a lot of shenanigans.
Okay. It's a lot deeper than we know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
A lot of shenanigans.
Wienergate.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I just don't know. When I looked at that, I was thinking that you're right. How does that happen? And how did and the Hillary emails, that was just kind of corny too, wasn't it?
Well, you know, as it pertains to how those emails supposedly wound up on that laptop, Uma Abedin's laptop, and that's all very shady. I don't know what's going on with that. Are you talking about how Hillary's emails got wound up in Assange's WikiLeaks?
Yeah, just the whole thing. I mean, that was all sort of... the thing is, I think of Hillary as corrupt in all these things, but I almost think the emails, and same as Benghazi, that's just kind of a flutter, you know? It's just kind of... I don't know.
Well, I think what happens is, though, especially with Benghazi, is it doesn't come out... Like, there was some shenanigans going on in Benghazi, too. There's no doubt about that. And I even talked to the mother of one of the guys that killed him in Benghazi, Catherine Patterson or something like that, Peterson. And, oh, boy, you know, there's just so much with that.
Well, I looked at Benghazi, but, you know, yeah. It seems like, you know, the CIA was involved. The president has to be involved. How much does the Secretary of State really get involved? And why would it just be pinned on her, not supporting her? But I'm just saying that there's a whole lot more to it. You can't just pick on who you don't like.
Right, but there's emails between Hillary Clinton and Blumenthal where she's talking about all the gold reserves they have in Benghazi and how we can take advantage of that. Where did all that money go? You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I mean. I think there's a corruption there.
Oh, yeah.
But...
Libya, we destroyed a beautiful country, man. People loved Gaddafi over there, you know, and we what do we do to that country, to those people? We destroyed it. And just like what we're doing to Haiti right now, that, you know, no money can get donated to Haiti without going through the IHRC, okay, the International Human Rights Commission, but it's also, it happens to stand for Hillary Rodham Clinton, okay, because the Clintons run that organization down there, and not a penny goes through there without passing through the Clintons' hands. They run it. And Clinton's brother down there owns what? A gold mine. And where did all this gold go missing in Libya? Maybe it showed up in the tallies of a gold mine down there in Haiti. Who knows? But there's just way too much. And that whole thing, too. I did a whole thing on this recently. That business about how all that money got stolen. All that money donated to Haiti got stolen. But they were supposed to build those tiny houses. I found out that the company that was working on that deal to build those tiny houses... Jeb Bush was on the board of directors of that company. So was Wesley Clark. And Obama had something to do with it, too, even before he was a presidential candidate, when he was still running for Congress. He was involved in that company, down there with that tiny house company. So they're all involved in it on both sides.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, I just looked at Trump is really about electing. You're just getting rid of the middleman.
Yeah.
You know, he would just pay off Bush or Clinton.
Yeah.
You know, you're saving money. Get rid of the middleman. Oh, well, this has been great. I've really enjoyed this. This is good to talk to you. And so now for everybody listening, where can they hear your show and what's your website?
The website is OppermanReport.com, and there's a special member section in there too, where I have exclusive content that you don't hear live on the air on Friday nights or Saturday nights. And there's also documents in there. I got the search warrant execution videos from the Epstein search warrant. All the Trump lawsuits are in there. I got the old Trump University lawsuits. I got a ton of stuff in there. You know, it's a nice research tool and a lot of exclusive shows. Now, you can hear my show Friday night. The best way to find me is just Google Opperman Report, and it will give you a list of all the places you can hear Spreaker, iHeart, iTunes. I'm also, too, I'm on there with you over there in Utah at KYAH on Saturday mornings and on Sunday evenings. So you can pretty much hear it. If you Google it, you'll find it. It's not too hard to write.
And actually, we'll have a link up for your show as well. So if people are on our site, they can just click and it'll take you right there.
Okay, great.
Well, it's been a pleasure, as always. And I hope you come back more.
Thank you so much, Al.
Thank you.
Hello there, welcome back. Listen, last week we had an amazing response to my first true crime commentary. You know, words can't explain. I really do appreciate the comments that we had and the support we're getting for this commentary. I want to ask a favor of you also, though, is I want you to invite somebody, perhaps right now, pick up the phone and say, hey, tune in, listen to this. This is really good stuff. I want you to listen to the House of Mystery on KKNW and listen to Steve's commentary. Just take a minute and let somebody know. You know, invite somebody to listen in, if you will. Okay, tonight we will continue with the second part of how do detectives know when someone is lying to them. Last week we covered a few things. We're going to cover some more and wrap up the second part here. Let's talk about briefly the narrative answer format to questioning. Now, when you ask an open-ended question, and most of the time that's what you want to do, there are the occasions where you want to pinpoint an answer and you want a yes or no answer, but when you're asking an open-ended question, typically what you will get from the person who is answering you is 20 to 30% of that will be introduction, or they're going to prep what they're saying to you. The other 35 to 65% is the main context of what they're going to tell you, and the remaining 20 to 40% is going to be the conclusion or the wrap-up of what they've told you. Now, the importance of all that is, if one section is far, far longer, you may be being fed a lot of false information. On the other hand, if one of those sections is far shorter, a lot of information, a lot of details that may have linked them to the crime or incident may have been left out. So a lot more information than required, or a lot less of information that they gave you based on those rough percentages. All right, now let's take the last few remaining minutes of this commentary and discuss some random lying indicators. Now again, I've said this in the first show, you can't hang your hat on one, two, even three or four, perhaps, indicators. You need a cluster. You might need some verbal indicators, some body language indicators, some eye indicators. You want a cluster. Do not ever hang your hat on one indicator. All right, well, let's talk about the first one. Let's talk about invoking God or religion. If someone invokes God or religion into their answers when their religion is not a matter of involvement in the incident, what I mean there is, if this is not a crime of hate based on religion, or a church is not involved, and they just randomly say, look, I swear to God I didn't, or with God as my witness, I didn't do that. If there's no reason to be discussing religion, and they invoke God or religion into their answer, you may be being lied to. Now, they also may give you non-committal answers. For instance, they may say, well, I think, best I can remember, I guess, maybe, perhaps. Now, you must keep in mind, however, that they may actually not remember. You know, just because somebody can't remember doesn't mean they're guilty of what you're questioning them about. Again, this is just one indicator.
Okay, they may also go on attack when you're asking them questions, especially if you're getting real close to them or getting close to the truth. Why are you asking me such stupid questions? This is a waste of my time. They start attacking in that manner. Another thing they may do is repeat the question back to you in their answer. For instance, did you steal the money? And then they look at you and say, did I steal the money? No, I did not steal the money. That's an indicator. Repeating the question back to you is an indicator of a lie. Perhaps they will give you a mid-sentence jump. Now, what is a mid-sentence jump? It's when they answer the question, but they very abruptly try to change the course of your investigation or the course of what you're asking. For instance, you ask them, did you steal the money? They answer, no, I did not steal that money. By the way, that's a nice shirt. Where did you get that? That's a mid-sentence jump. If they do that, again, an indicator that you're not being told the truth. If you ask a question that requires a yes or a no answer, listen to their answer no. Listen how they answer no. If they say no after a hesitation, that's an indicator of a lie. If they say no and look away, that's an indicator of a lie. If they say no in a singing manner, for instance, no, I did not, that's an indicator of lying. Okay, they may also groom themselves while they're talking to you or answering a question. For instance, if it's a female and she does her makeup, pulls out and does some lipstick, does some hairspray, or if it's a male and combs his hair or straightens his tie, that's an indicator that you're being lied to. Another thing that a liar may do is what we call deflection. They want to deflect the line of questioning. So, for instance, if you say, did you steal the money? And they reply back, steal the money? Why would I do that? All right, now these are just some of the indicators. And again, in 10 minutes, we don't have a lot of time to go over everything. But I wanted to give you some indicators and some information to go on. If you would like more information, you may purchase my book, How to Catch a Liar. It's available on Amazon, Kindle, Books a Million, and Barnes & Noble. I also want to invite you to check out my website. We have a new program, a new seminar, 2-hour seminar that we're giving across the country on forensics for the true crime fan. And this is a really different type of seminar, and it's centered to people who are fans of true crime television or true crime radio shows. This is basically a behind-the-scenes forensic seminar. We discuss such things as fingerprints, ballistics, gunshot residue, crime scene profiling, serial killers. We discuss blood spatter. We even delve into forensic psychology and anthropology. We'll discuss crime scene processing and how that's done. We spend a little bit of time talking about the CSI effect. We'll go over evidence and how evidence is collected. And we'll even talk about insect evidence. And there's a lot more as well. If you want to, just go to my website, www.stephendavidlampley.com, and click on the forensic seminar and get some information. Listen, I appreciate it. I appreciate your support, and I look forward to talking to you again next week. Have a good evening.
To find out more about our show, guests, or listen to a previous show, visit our website at www.somethingweirdmedia.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.